Who complained from death and faith.
Yeah, it's okay.
Thou art thyself the author of thy pain.
It's not really the moment to be talking about grace afterwards.
In a vast of truth, consciousness and light, the soul looked out from its felicity. Then, curious of a shadow, thrown by truth, it strained towards some otherness of self. It was drawn to an unknown face, peering through night, as one drawn by the grandeur of the void. The soul attracted me to the abyss.
Good morning, everyone. On International Yoga Day, we are meeting today. There have already been some celebrations. We are reading in Book 6, the Book of Fate, Canto 2, The Way of Fate and the Problem of Pain. And we've reached page 448. Narad is answering a series of questions from Savitri's mother about pain, about fate, about destiny. She says, is it your God who has created all this suffering? Or is there some hostile power that is responsible and God is helpless? She pointed out all the different aspects of suffering. And Narad is giving her an answer, a series of answers. We have His answer is spread over four sections of the canto, and we read the first and the longest of those sections. And last week, we just read the other three sections, but we are now going to begin studying them. He started by saying that pain is necessary to wake consciousness up in the inertia of this material world, that it's through pain that we grow and progress and become able to feel bliss eventually. But meanwhile, it seems as if there are certain powers who are allowed to apparently distort the divine will and introduce falsehood and suffering into the world. And so it is necessary for human beings to overcome those forces of falsehood. No? And if we want to bring God's peace here on earth, we have to conquer those forces, those adverse forces. And he said they are hidden. This is a hidden enemy lodged in the human breast. Man, the human race, must overcome this hidden foe. And if we fail, we will miss our higher fate. He said, this is the inner war without escape. So all of us who are dedicated to a better future for mankind, we are implicated in this inner war. We all of us have to participate in our own way. And then he starts to speak about the special ones, the ones who come, who are already free, but who come back into the suffering human state in order to help redeem the world. We read a few of these sentences. I'm not quite sure where we stopped. We can. That's what I thought we read on somewhere. But anyway, let's read the first two sentences again. We'll start at the break on page 448. Patty, will you begin?
Part is the world redeemer Savitas. The world itself becomes his adversary. Those he would save are his antagonists. This world is in love with its own ignorance. Its darkness turns away from the Savior light. It gives the cross in payment for the crown. His work is a trickle of splendor in a long night. He sees the long march of time, the little one. A few are saved, the rest strive on and fade. A sun has passed, on earth night's shadow falls.
Thank you. I feel that it is especially poignant when we read these lines to realize that they may have been written during the last months of Sri Aurobindo's time in the human body. He had come with this great task and this work that he saw was his mission. But it seems that he also foresaw that he would have to leave. And then the shadow would fall on the earth again. Of course, the mother would be here, but he asked her to carry on his work. But a few are saved, the rest strive on and fail. He was aware of this aspect of the World Redeemer's work. And I think that's reflected in the rest of this section. Audrey.
The most poignant sentence in this to me, and one thinks of him, if that is what you just said, it's true. This world is in love with its own ignorance.
The whole world yearns for freedom, he has said, but man is in love with his chain. You would read, Don?
Yes, there are happy ways near to God's Son, But few are they who tread the sunlit path. Only the pure in soul can walk in light. An exit is shown, a road of hard escape from the sorrow and the darkness and the chain. But how shall a few escaped release the world? The human mass lingers beneath the yoke. Escape, however high, redeems not life. Life that is left behind on a fallen earth. Escape cannot uplift the abandoned race or bring to it victory and the reign of God. A greater power must come, a larger light. Although light grows on earth and night recedes, yet till the evil is slain in its own home and light invades the world's inconscient base and perished has the adversary force, he still must labor on, his work half done.
Thank you. So Sri Aurobindo labored all his life, and the mother too, to bring that greater power, that larger light, and to spread it as much as possible. That's the only solution. And he says that light is growing on earth and the night is receding, but still that light has to come right down into the inconscient, and the whole distortion has to be slain, it has to be eradicated in its own home where its roots are, there in the inconscient. Light has to penetrate, no? And the adversary force has to be dissolved, it has to perish. That adversary force. He says we can't blame humanity for this. No? We talked about it a little last time, I think.
In the letters of Yula, he describes the three steps from ignorance.
We can't hear you, Margaret.
In the letters of Yula too, I just read the three steps. No? That is the three steps of ignorance. That's not. But who are willingly against the divine, that is an adversary force.
In the Life Divine, we read the chapter about the remedy, the origin and remedy of error. I can't remember the four things. Can you remember, Jean-Yves?
Yes.
Error, suffering, evil and falsehood. I haven't got the order quite right, but these are the four aspects of this adverse, of the results of this adverse force, which seems to have been manifested, according to what the mother has said, in the process of creation, when these successive planes were manifested. At the vital level, there was the possibility for those creative powers who had been emanated to manifest the world, the universe, the subtle and the material universe, to cut the connection with the origin. And when they did that, they immediately turned into their opposites. So truth becomes falsehood, bliss becomes suffering, life becomes death, truth becomes falsehood. And those powers are in control of matter. That happened at the vital level. Matter was created after that. So there are subtle planes and worlds and kingdoms where the beings who represent this cut reside, and they, in their power, they are still holding on. The war is being fought on the life level, on the vital level. That's where the inner war goes on. But the victory will be won on the material level. Yes, Don?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you were waving your hand. Ganga Lakshmi had a question.
Just I want to tell you, in 1960 or 61, I don't remember, Mother explained 3 pages about this 4 revelation. It's incredible power. And explain the emanation also, the work in the world, depends your transformation of your.
If you send me the reference,
yeah,
then we can print that out and share it with everyone.
I give you in English.
Yes.
It's very, very, very nice.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
And also, in the book, Shradalu, before, when we were working there, he told me, for India, he had read battle, the last battle. And Azura tell to mother, you destroy me, but before I destroy some part of the world.
I know that I will be conquered, but beforehand I will do as much damage as I can.
I don't trust at all this part. For me, Schrödinger said, Amal Kiran wrote something in French in 1950. I read yesterday again and again, but it's incredible, but it's in French. Some woman gave me 1950, Le Trépas de Schrödinger. It's incredible. Described, no. He's conquered and any forces opposite to him. It's not possible. That's all. For me, I want to tell that he's you work much more inside about this aspect.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Error, suffering, and falsehood in me.
Yes.
I think I can recognize.
Yes.
But what is evil?
The evil, as Margaret said, that's when there are beings and forces who are committed to that. They don't want to change.
So that would be in an individual's life, places that one refuses to be open.
I think the root of the evil is not in humanity. When we see it operating, we feel that this is something that has been imposed on us, that human beings don't behave like that. So there are forces, then beings that come and they possess human beings, and through them they work their evil. No?
So human beings,
I mean, that's my personal, I'm not sure exactly what Sri Aurobindo and Mother would say.
So
I think of people being possessed by evil.
So they can't change that.
Maybe at an early stage it's possible to resist. I think one is always given the choice. But when the force, if you are too weak and the force is too powerful. No?
I think education is needed for this from small on. I think that education is needed for human beings, for children, that they can stay with their soul and know what is right, you know, from small on, and not grow up in a surrounding which they don't learn to discriminate. You
know. Yes.
And I think that this is a manifestation of what you're talking about here, but many of you have no doubt read in the newspaper over the past day or two there that Uta Humanities hideous destruction of the ecology here, there, and everywhere, that an incredible disaster is about to occur on the earth. And of course, it sounds just like...
But this is not intentional. This is not evil. Evil is when there's really a delight, a perverse delight in doing inhuman things.
Isn't this evil adversary working on humanity? Well, humanity,
yes.
You say, doesn't know that it's that evil. Isn't that the delight, the one who's delighted?
Yes. Anyway, this is what the World Redeemer is working to combat, and we believe that we are convinced that the powers of good are stronger than the powers of evil. It's only because of the ignorance of humanity that we get influenced without, as you say, being aware of it. So all this in its way, its own way, is very poignant and touching. I think what comes next, in a way, it's even more moving. Would you read, sir? Are you able to read? Yeah. At the top of page 449, one yet may come.
One yet may come, armored, invincible, his will immobile, midst the mobile hour, the world's blow cannot bend and dip, bend that victory. Calm and sure are his steps in the growing night, the goal recedes, he hurries not his pace. He turns not to high voices in the night. He asks no aid from the inferior gods. His eyes are fixed on his immutable aim. Man turns aside, but chooses easier paths. He keeps to the one high and difficult road. The soul can climb to the eternal peaks. Ineffable plains already have felt his trade. He has made heaven and earth his instruments. But the limits fall from him of earth and heaven. Their law he transcends, but uses as his means. He has seized life's hands. He has mastered his own heart. Defense of manager misled not his sight, inflexible his look towards the truth's far aim. Fate's deep resistance cannot break his will.
Let's pause there. Fate's deaf resistance can. We'll pause there, yes. Cannot break his will. Yeah. Yes.
You see, the last line you read, faith's death resistance cannot break his will. We know resistance, we can say obstinate resistance and things like that, but why death resistance?
Yes. We can't affect fate by fine words, however fine. No. Fate is death. We can't influence fate. I mean, that's the idea of what fate is. And however much it resists, the will of this one is not going to be broken by that resistance of fate. And in fact, Sri Aurobindo has written in The Life Divine that these resistances, these impossibilities that present themselves on the forward journey, in fact, if we see them rightly, these are the seal of nature on the success of the mission. Because he says, nature is always dealing with impossibilities, with solving impossible tasks. She takes things that seem to be absolutely contradictory and harmonizes them. So if we see an opposition, a complete opposition to our ordinary consciousness, that seems like God saying no. But that is not God saying no. That is God saying yes.
These are the feints of nature?
No, these are not the feints of nature. Or I don't think so. Or maybe, yes, the feints, the misleading appearances of nature. Yes.
I read in this time also Letters of Yoga number 2, and there he also so nice how he describes that this challenge we get, the more we proceed, we get also more challenge, so that the basic get good settled down with all the challenges.
So in that case, if you have a good and easy life, then we should be happy and content with that, or we should ask for some challenges.
Sri Aurobindo says the soul may choose challenges in order to make a more rapid progress.
Mm-hmm. Our soul may also want to have a break from all the challenges that are easy, right?
Well, sometimes that's necessary too.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think if you're doing sadhana, you won't have an easy ride. Sri Aurobindo was sitting in his room. You didn't have an easy ride. Because the resistance of life and matter, that is where the problem is.
But later on, I think he will advise that we shouldn't go looking for sufferings and difficulties. He says, they will find you out. No? We don't have to go looking for them. So if you are given relatively favorable circumstances, the important thing is not just to feel asleep and think that fall asleep and think that's due to your own virtue and worthiness and all the rest of it, that it's some reward for past karma. It is to use it as a base to go on making progress, even if things are easy and pleasant. Yeah.
Because he says man turns aside or chooses easier paths. Mm. Man can come up with what he thinks is easier for him.
Well, that's natural. That's natural for humanity.
Yeah.
But that one will not do that, does not do that.
Now be careful what you ask for, because you might get it.
Mm-hmm.
Trust in the Lord to send the quantity and quality of challenges, not in the does.
The biggest challenge is to stop trying to run your own life, whether it's for the easy or the difficult, not the divine handle.
So he continues with this description. Are we ready to go on? Anybody would still like to ask anything?
Yeah, I can't imagine that nature has feints.
What is a feint exactly? I think it is a term from...
No,
it is a term from fencing. So, when you are fencing, fighting with a rapier, it's a kind of sword, but it's not a big, heavy sword, it's a very fine sword. And you have to get past your opponent's guard, so you make a misleading move, so that he thinks you're going to do something else, and then you get him. So... I think it means the way that the appearances of nature can be misleading to us.
Yeah, it's a pretense or false appearance. It's
Did you say the word that lines 440? 441?
Oh, yes, he has made heaven and earth his instruments. So he's found out how to use the higher levels, the possibilities of the higher levels of consciousness and manifestation, and the material world. He's made both his instruments. He's found out how to use them for his purpose. But the limits, the limitations of those higher levels of consciousness, as well as the limitations of the material consciousness, they just fall away from them, him. He is not bound by those limitations, either of earth or heaven. He transcends the laws of matter, the laws of physics, the laws operating in the material world, and he transcends also the laws operating in the spiritual realms. He's not bound by those laws and limitations, but he uses them as his means. Yes, very important line. This one has transcended not only the material existence, but also the limitations of the subtler, higher worlds, which are described in Book 2 of Savitri. It's interesting that he puts it in the future. No? But this is Narad speaking, so Narad may be looking forward to the future. No? One yet may come.
This is the future, or is it the possibility? I understand it that it is not for sure that somebody comes.
Yes, he says, one yet may come, armored, invincible. That sounds not sure.
That sounds not sure. Yes. He himself is not sure.
Yes. So let's read on. Marie-Ange.
In the dreadful passages, the fatal task, invulnerable his soul, his heart unslain, he lives through the opposition of earth's powers and nature's ambushes and the world's attacks. His spirit's stature, transcending pain and bliss, it wants evil and good with calm and equal eyes. He too has grappled with the living Sphinx and plunged into a long obscurity. He has woken into the unconscious depth that they themselves event from their own regard. He has seen God's slumber shake his magic worlds. He has watched the dumb God fashioning matter's dream, gleaming the gleam of its unknowing sleep, and watched the unconscious force that built the stars. He has learned the unconscious workings and its law, its incoherent thought and rigid act, its hazard wastes of impulse and idea, chaos of its mechanic frequencies, its random calls, its whispers falsely true, misleaders of the hooded listening soul. All things come to its ear, but nothing abides. All woes from the silence, all goes back to its heart.
Thank you.
I think it's interesting how he switches the tenses here.
Yes.
It's first his future, one yet may come, and then it's the present, he has no aid. And then his past, he has seized life plans, he has mastered his own heart.
Yes.
So it's like this.
And in the present, he, even too, this one must grapple with the riddling Sphinx, no, and plunge into her long obscurity. But then it says that he has done that. No, he has broken into the unconscious depths. the God in matter, God's slumber, as if unconscious, in sleep, he's fashioned, he's made these magic worlds, including matter. The force that has built the stars is unconscious, he says, just like the physicists say that it's unconscious force. And yet, there's a purpose behind, and a design.
I think it shows that because the divine is everything, he's past,
present, and future. Okay,
some means he's already done it, and some he's doing it, and some he will do it.
Yes. Yes.
But it comes even in that those first two lines. One,
yes.
Yet will come.
Yes.
And then his will meets.
Yes.
Already is present.
Yes.
Sure, you know yourself with all those three in one.
So now, in what Marianne read, the inconscient, the role of the inconscient has been introduced. No? That one has learned the inconscient's workings and its law. Its incoherent thoughts, they are not rational, they are not connected, they are incoherent. And its actions are rigid. Its hazard wastes of impulse and idea. Hazard, as if it's a game of chance. You know, by chance, things come up, impulses and ideas, and very often they may not have any effect. And it's all vibrating at certain frequencies, but these frequencies are mechanical and they are in a chaotic arrangement. No? All this is going on in the inconscient. It's random calls. Its whispers falsely true. These are all misleaders of the hooded, listening soul. This hooded soul who is involved in matter, perhaps, in disguise, listening. It hears all these impulses coming from the inconscient, all these random calls and impulses, no?
Are you saying hazard here means haphazard?
I'm not quite sure that it's that.
It's not in this dictionary.
Hazard and haphazard.
I only know hazard as a noun.
Hazard in that sense of haphazard, it's things that happen by chance in a chaotic way. So I think the meaning is connected.
Dangerous?
Well, we think of hazard as meaning dangerous because it involves taking risks. So if something is done in at hazard, it means you can't predict the outcome. It's unpredictable. So, and then there are these two lines, all things come to its ear, but nothing abides. All rose from the silence, all goes back to its hush. Is this the inconscient? But it's the ear, the soul is listening. Hmm? I'm not sure, Patty. You tell me.
It comes first and foremost, it's through them.
Yeah, the first it comes on page 460. Yeah. I think in the passage that follows, this it is the inconscient. You want to read a bit, Rosa? No? I'm baffled. I'm baffled. I don't know. We find out, yes. Awesome.
It from Nolan's sounded that universe. It's obscure, waiting makes the world seem great. And it arisen from nothingness and towards nothingness journey. It's dark and was that star. It is the base stuff from which all was made. Into its deeps creation can collapse. Its opposition clothes the march of the soul. It is the mother of our ignorance. He must call light into its dark bliss.
Abyss.
Else never can truth from clear matters sleep, and all earth look into the eyes of God.
Thank you. So this is the inconscient. This is the base, the world's inconscient base. And that's where the adversary force has its roots.
This explains why we have to clean up the trash. Because all the trash is there because of unconscious acts.
Yeah.
So it's a potent reminder. It says into its deeps creation can collapse.
Yes. But at the same time, it's the mother of our ignorance. It has given rise to something, to this state which is not inconscient, which knows that it doesn't know, this state of ignorance. So, but he, the world redeemer, must call light into its dark abysms. That is the only way that truth can conquer that sleep of matter. the only way that all earth can become able to look into the eyes of God. So this transformation of matter is essential for the fulfillment of the purpose of this material universe.
So I wonder if you need to, or he needs to be identified with that in order to call the light there, or can you call from above?
I think we have to think of that poem of Sri Aurobindo's about a god's labor, where he said he was digging in the mud. He had those dreams of a better earth, and he was digging in the mud, and what a terrible ordeal that was. But he says, finally, I can leave those dreams because on earth, the reality that I'm dreaming of will manifest. So I think a total identification is not what's called for, but perhaps a partial identification, like the mother when she was working on the transformation of her body. She said that all the higher possibilities were as if taken away from her. She had to be in that physical consciousness, of course, with all her higher possibilities behind, to do the work. Yeah. But if we're inconscient, if we're inconscient, we can't call the light. No, there has to be something that is conscious and calls the light. Yes, a bridge, exactly. Yes.
I found that question very helpful. Thank you. Mm. I've been asking myself that same question.
Mm.
And forgetting to bring it up in this.
Audrey, you'd like to read on?
All things obscure his knowledge must reveal. All things perverse his power must unknown. He must pass to the other shore of falsehood's sea. He must enter the world's dark to bring there light. The heart of evil must be guarded by. He must learn its cosmic dark necessity, its right and its dire roots in nature's soul. He must know the thought that moves within an act and justifies the titan-bearing rock and the falsehood lurking in earth's crooked dreams. He must enter the eternity of night and know God's darkness as he knows his son. For this he must go down into the pit. For this he must invade the glorious vasts, imperishable and wise and infinite. He still must travel hell, the world to save.
Thank you. Yes.
9490.
Yes.
And know God's darknesses as he knows his light to his son.
Yes.
So last time you said the devas are the beings of light and dashras are the beings of the darkness.
Yes.
And they have the joy of transformation which devas do not have.
Mm.
And here it says the gods have darkness. So the gods are different.
Here he doesn't say the gods, he says God, the Supreme, no?
Yeah.
Satchitanam.
So this passage answers the question of whether he can stay above or he has to come down. So I was just thinking that he did come down when that pit of the Mata Mandira was being dug. When I was in there this morning for a yoga day, it was right during the time when they were doing yoga in Delhi.
the 35,000 people, and I just thought, it looks so dim in here. And I looked up, and the light was hardly visible, and there was like a blackness around it. And then I looked down at the crystal, and there was like a cloud, two clouds, now near the bottom, and I thought, this is very strange, it's yoga day, and it looks so dark in here. And I thought, oh, maybe Shiva's swallowing the poison of the world today, so...
Pity, I was also there, and there was a wonderful rainbow, and full light on the crystal, and shine on me and on other people.
But you were below. You were down below in the...
No, I was in the inner chamber.
You were in the chamber.
We were there till 7:25. Then you must have been in a different position where I was. It was quite dark. Now, I've seen that rainbow in the past, yeah, but not today.
But the real question is, what does he mean when he says God's darkness? That was your real question.
Because everything is God.
Saw Krishna, that Krishna shows him the dark side, and then Arjuna said, oh, no, please show only the other side.
So anyway, yeah.
Was that your phone, Don?
Oh, yeah. I just told you the school monitor has to stand in the corner.
Don is the one who is supposed to remind us to switch off.
But when I came out of the Mata Mandir and I was coming here, I was thinking, you know, that line that the soul of the world called Satyavan. And I thought, this Mata Mandir in front of me is that soul of the world, and Satyavan is here now. So. It officially, it was finished in 2008, is that correct? I mean, they called it finished. So that's when things began to turn.
Anybody has any light to cast on his question?
On the darkness?
God's night? God's darkness, as he knows his son.
The entire passage that we've been reading, it's like God's slumber, dumb God. And darkness, and like it's with the next word is gone.
Would you like to say something, sir?
God's darkness refers to the universe. The universe consists of 80% dark matters, and only 10-20% has a little penetrable taste. So, to know the universe, you must know the
darkness.
Basically, it is this darkness which is the majority of the universe.
And the source of all matter.
Source of all. And the light which is referred in this is the sun. The sunlight takes millions of years to descend.
Yes.
This is the process through which he has perceived, Sri Aurobindo has perceived the world in its entirety.
Yes.
And while doing so, he must have seen that this travel is 80% through the darkness.
Yes.
So creation of the universe is such that the darkness is a major component. So you cannot see darkness in isolation of the sun or the light.
Yes.
Or the light in isolation of the darkness.
They are two aspects of the Supreme Himself.
The same universe.
Yes.
Thank
you very much. That's a really nice answer. Thank you.
It can also be just consciousness trapped in matter.
Yes.
Yeah, both are true.
Yes.
Now, thinking of what you said at the beginning of this class, you began by talking about the Buddha. At the vital level,
cutting the connection. Yes.
The light travels.
Yes.
It is not a hindrance. But darkness is something where the light doesn't travel.
Yeah.
So one has to be conscious of the darkness.
Yes.
That must be the meaning. I don't know why. This is my
personal. No,
it's true. He says, talks about
yes,
conquering matter sleeps.
Yes.
Even when you don't see the ray, the divine is still there, the sun is still there.
Yeah, I think that nobody, it seems, knows what the darkness is, and therefore it just reflects that we are still ignorant of the darkness. The darkness is
darkness is the absence of the light.
The absence of our knowledge.
To go through the
darkness. Our understanding.
Shall we read on? Yes.
On page 449.
Yes.
Lines 454 and 455.
Inflexible his look towards truth's far end. Fate's death resistance cannot break his will. Is that your question, Alice?
He has broken into the inconscient depths that veil themselves even from their own regard.
Oh, sorry, yes. Yes.
I feel that's related to what we've been talking about.
Absolutely. The thing is, once that Shirvino had the inner contact, then going through the darkness was possible, because he knew who was in. As somebody said in our group today, never be discouraged. He told somebody who was a newcomer here.
I think of it as consciousness becoming force.
Yes.
And so there's like a continuum between the two, and then absolute force, there's no consciousness, but.
No, in absolute force, there's absolute consciousness. The inconscient, the possibilities of the inconscient, all potentialities are there, but they are latent. It's as if they are sleeping, they are veiled, and they emerge unconsciously, in sleep.
I think that's why the evolution of consciousness is it's a push go forward to become in light and consciousness in all the parts.
So the consciousness and the force are involved there in the inconscient from the very beginning, otherwise there couldn't be any waking up. He speaks of this descent, you know, where everything gets compressed into matter. All the possibilities get kaleidoscoped into matter, but then it's as if the consciousness and the force become unconscious and helpless. They're not really.
It's like this line, it's obscure waking makes the world seem vain.
Mm.
But if we could look at the world the way parents do with their little children, when the children makes a mistake or says something silly, they laugh, no?
Mm.
Because they know the child is growing, he will overcome it. But usually we take things too seriously in life. So it seems
But we are programmed to take them seriously because we are supposed to make an effort in order to become.
But we can't solve it. If we leave it to her, we can enjoy even when we're traveling in the darkness.
But we have to collaborate, don't we?
Yes, I see her there.
Anyway, please, let us see if we can reach the end of the...
We are at a low, relatively low level of evolution. We believe that.
Yeah.
And so much of what's going on here now that we're reading today is manifesting the fact that we're not yet capable of doing, of understanding, and so on there.
What we do have, what we have been given, is this kind of half consciousness and the possibility of choice and of a certain amount of discrimination. So there, it depends how we use that. Are we going to collaborate with the darkness? Are we going to go back into the primitive state? Or are we going to make our best effort, however ill-informed and however helpless, to aim for something higher? And that's why humanity's collaboration is actually precious. You know, we have the name of that flower which you liked so much, mental goodwill. Some other said it's a little show, a bit of a show off. but very useful. So mental goodwill.
I just read that one. No.
Yes, this one. Yes.
Yes, so fresh.
Mm. Yeah.
So we are children, but we can be happy babies.
Well, we can try to be happy babies, yes.
No, in early childhood, focus. In that training, if it's good training, we are taught to read, like if we're a teacher, and we're a kindergarten teacher, and we have records that have been kept for the pre-kindergarten level. And we read the whatever is said, and anything that's negative, like this child has ADD, ADHD, or some show signs of dyslexia, or the problems in the home, we put that in our consciousness, and then we keep it to the side, we put it on the back burner, and we focus on that child.
On the positive side.
Yes, with the child's mind, with a blank slate.
Mm.
And I find that is developed, that quality is developing in me greatly with what I'm learning from this.
Mm.
It's very helpful to keep to know that darkness is there and these problems are there, but to not focus on it, because if we focus on it, we empower what we're focusing on. I mean, scientifically, they've done lots of experiments that show that whatever you're looking at under the microscope is affected by you're just observing it.
Mm.
So we are trained as teachers, especially early childhood education teachers, to focus on the possibilities and the light instead of the dark. And
yes.
But we don't forget that they're there, like Pollyanna, you know, seeing through a rose-colored glass.
That's what Mother did with everybody.
What?
That's what Mother did. Mother did with everybody. She would see everything, but she looked right through to see what the good was in them.
To protect the possibilities. Yeah. So, Helmut, would you read on, please?
Into the eternal light he shall emerge on borders of the meeting of all worlds. There, on the verge of nature's sinning steps, the secret law of each thing is fulfilled. All contours heal their long dissidence. There meet and clasp the eternal opposites. Their pain becomes a violent, fiery joy. Evil turns back to its original good. And sorrow lies upon the breasts of bliss. She has learned to weep glad tears of happiness. Her gaze is charged with a wistful ecstasy. Then shall be ended here the law of pain. Earth shall be made a home of heaven's light. A seer, heaven-born, shall lodge in human breasts. The super-conscient beam shall touch man's eyes. And the truth-conscious world come down to earth, invading matter with the spirit's ray, awakening its silence to immortal thoughts. Awaking the dumb heart to the living world. This mortal life shall house eternity's bliss, the body self taste immortality. Then shall the world redeemer's tasks be done.
Mm, thank you. But he has to travel hell, the world to save. No, that was the last line we read before. He has to travel hell. That's what's described Asvapati doing that in Canto 8 of Book 2. And he himself, he finds then the oneness and the reconciliation and emerges into the paradise of the life gods. So this is something even more fundamental. It's going down into the not just the vital hell, but into this root of the world distortion. Mm. And he shall emerge into the light, into the supramental world, the borders of the meeting of all worlds. There, The secret law of each thing is fulfilled. And all contraries heal their long dissidence, all the opposition and separation. There meet and clasp the eternal opposite.
So, and this she refers to
sorrow.
To sorrow.
The truth conscious world shall come down to earth, invading matter with the spirit's ray, awaking its silence, the silence of matter, no? To immortal thoughts, awaking the dumb heart to the living word. This mortal life shall house eternity's bliss, the body's self taste immortality. So we can be sure that a very big step has been taken towards this on 29th February 1956, when the supramental power, force, invaded matter. And Mother described to Huta, and Huta's even made a painting of it, how this wonderful golden light poured down and it was swallowed up by waves of dark blue inconscience. But Mother said it is there and it's working and it will emerge. So light has been brought down into the abyss. Light has invaded the world's inconscient base.
The bliss garden looks nearly finished. The fountains were not running, but I walked there and I stood at the center of that. And what it says, this mortal life shall house eternity's bliss. But this is absolutely Mater Mandir described here.
Yeah,
super conscient beam shall touch men's eyes, and truth conscious will come down to earth and beat matter with the spirit's ray. So, it's here.
And Sharanand, this body self taste immortality. I will never forget that we once tell when you met the mother, how you experienced her arms, no?
I saw, I didn't feel. From a distance, I saw the mother, somebody dropped something, and Mother made a gesture to show where that thing was and where it was to be put. And then I could see that this was not flesh, this was consciousness. Shouldn't speak about these things.
Why?
Well, it's such a powerful thing, and every time one speaks of it, a little bit gets...
Even if we speak of it very seldom with great reverence, maybe we'll be forgiven for that.
So, we've reached the end of the section. We can listen to Mother reading some lines from this canto. These two. Yeah.
May I say that today is so remarkable in the numbers. You see, 21 is Mother's birthday, 15 is Sri Aurobindo, and 6 is new creation. So I think this is a good birthday
date
for the universe. Mm-hmm. And India is taking over.
Thank you. Narad made reply, tuning his lips to earthly sound. He spoke, implacable in the passion of their will, lifting the hammer of titanic toil. The demiurges of universal work, they shape with giant strokes thereof. Their sons are marked with their enormous stamp of fire.
Thanks to Sherpindo.